Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Yeah, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Yeah, it sure is, babe. Cool, cool, cool. Yeah, man, I'm just going to keep it pretty cool and casual this time. What do you think? You like this energy?
No, not at all.
It's whatever, you know? It's like, are we making a podcast or are we not making a podcast? It's whatever, dude.
Okay.
This is how I'm sort of getting through it now. Also, to step outside the bit. It's just be like, okay, whatever, man. It's cool. All right.
Does this character have gum in his mouth?
Kind of. Maybe. Maybe this character chews gum. That's fun, babe. See, we're building the bit together. Uh-huh. We're working in the space together. Uh-huh. This is gum chewing Dan, and he doesn't have a care in the world, does he? Because he's kind of above it all. Do you want to be one? Do you want to be a gum chewing Dan?
No, but can I be somebody else?
Sure, yeah.
I am Jawbreaker Julie.
Oh, hit me with what that sounds like.
So heart. Here's the thing.
She's great.
I set my alarm, but then I didn't wake up, so I'm late. Whatever.
That's really good, babe.
Thank you.
This is so powerful. Yeah. This is what's going to get us through this thing together as a community.
Just escapes into it's fantasy world.
Escapes
worlds.
Into fantasy, a little light role play. But you know I've been trying to get into for a long time. I think this is indicative of my small wonder this week, which is the Schwartz and Middleditch special that we watched last night on Netflix with Ben Schwartz and Thomas Middleditch. Holy shit. It is the hardest I have laughed at anything for certain since all this started, but also maybe in the last year or two. It absolutely busted me up, had me in stitches, that special.
So good. Long form improv, which I think at first made Griffin a little nervous, but delightful.
No, I adore it when I know I'm in the trusted, capable hands of people who are really, really good at it. I can't remember the guys that you introduced me to.
TJ and Dave.
TJ and Dave from the Sonic commercial. One of them's in the Sonic commercials.
Yeah, they're a Chicago icon. That at least for a while did a weekly show where they would just start out with a prompt or a suggestion, and they would just go for an hour.
And that is what Middleditch and Schwartz is. And holy Christ, no joke. Like, I'm recommending it to everybody that I'm talking to now because it's like a little beautiful little levity balloon to enjoy. Do you have a small wonder?
I do. This is not going to surprise anybody, but Fiona Apple's new album, Fetch the Bolt Cutters, downloaded it, actually bought it in the iTunes the first day it came out, and I've been listening to it pretty frequently. I would say I listened to that whole album maybe 5 or 6 times already.
Wow.
It's phenomenal. Everything you're reading about it is true. It is exceptionally good, and I would recommend it.
I haven't dipped in yet. I've been listening to LMFAO's new album.
Oh, and what's that called?
Fetch the Bolt Cutters also. Oh. Yeah, it's a weird sort of kawinky dink. Yeah. But yeah, it's good. It's got a lot of emotions in it, and it's sort of a turn for them because it's just one vocalist, and it's a woman, and she is singing a lot of sort of quiet, non-party songs. And now that I'm saying all this, I think I may have actually been listening to Fiona Apple. But they mixed up the thumbnail on Spotify.
Oh.
Yeah.
Someone
should fix that, I think, immediately. You go first this week. What's your first thing?
My first thing is a trip to the Poetry Corner.
Oh, wow. Right away, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to start right there.
Let me put on my shoes. Gosh. Poetry, poetry, radioactive poetry. I started singing the Spider-Man melody, and I don't regret it. Watch out!
Oh,
here comes the poetry.
I like that.
All right.
And you know, there's a lot of similarities between Spider-Man and poetry.
I think so, too.
You know, when you're swinging from building to building?
Yeah.
Like from stanza to stanza?
It's like there's a rhythm to it.
Uh-huh.
And you fight Dr. Octopus.
Uh-huh.
Like you do in poetry.
Mm-hmm. You hang upside down and
you kiss why can't I remember her name?
Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst. There's not that many Kirstens.
The poet I am bringing this week is a Polish poet, and her name is Wisława Szymborska.
Oh, I know her.
Oh, yeah?
No.
I always think it's going to happen.
You thought it would happen with this one?
Yeah. Huh, she's relatively well known.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. I guess there's something well known that I don't know. Wow. Egg on my face.
I actually am relatively new to her work, so I probably shouldn't. But she won a Nobel Prize, which makes her, you know, one of the more recognizable poets.
Yes, for sure.
Actually, she won it in 1996, and the Academy praised her poetry that, quote, had ironic precision that allows the historical and biological context to come to light in fragments of human reality.
It's hard for me to follow what that meant, but I bet it's good and cool and smart.
She, as I mentioned, grew up in Poland, is well known there, and got recognition once she won that Nobel Prize kind of globally. She didn't have a lot of collections of poetry. From what I can tell, there's about four that have been translated into English. Maybe she has more that have not been translated.
Sure.
She said in her Nobel speech that, quote, in the language of poetry, where every word is weighted, nothing is usual or normal, not a single stone and not a single cloud above it, not a single day and not a single night after it, and above all, not a single existence, not anyone's existence in this world.
Do you think after she said that, she was like, and oh, damn, hold up, I gotta go write that down, because I think it was a poem? I can't just give those away for free. Yes, that was a poem, and it was mine. Trademark, trademark.
The other thing that she said in her Nobel Prize is she joked about lives of poets. She said, great films can be made of lives of scientists and artists, but not poets. Quote, their work is hopelessly unphotogenic. Someone sits at a table or lies on a sofa while staring motionless at a wall or ceiling. Once in a while, that person writes down 7 lines, only to cross out one of them 15 minutes later. And then another hour passes, during which nothing happens.
Even that. Does she ever say stuff like, I want to eat a ham sandwich for lunch today?
I mean, that's what they're talking about, that ironic precision.
Right.
You know, I really liked her poetry because I found it very playful, you know, and very the translations must be incredible because like the language in the translation is so rhythmic and perfect. And I have to imagine that she's one of the few poets that got that kind of treatment in translation because I love it.
I've never thought about that before. Obviously, like translation and localization is like, yeah, it's an important thing. But in terms of poetry,
to get like the meter right, yeah. And if there's rhyme. So I wanted to read a poem from View with a Grain of Sand. The poem is called The Acrobat. And I enjoy it particularly for kind of the rhythm and the language, because it very much mirrors, you know, an acrobat.
Right.
From trapeze to trapeze, in the hush that follows the drum roll's sudden pause, through the startled air, more swiftly than his body's weight, which once again is late for its own fall. Solo, or even less than solo, less, because he's crippled, missing wings, missing them so much that he can't miss the chance to soar on shamefully unfeathered naked vigilance alone. Arduous E is watchful agility and calculated inspiration. Do you see how he waits to pounce in flight? Do you know how he plots from head to toe against his very being? Do you know, do you see how cunningly he weaves himself through his own former shape and works to seize this swaying world by stretching out the arms he has conceived? Beautiful beyond belief at this passing, at this very passing moment that he's just passed.
That is a poem-ass poem right there.
I love, like, you can just picture this, like, trapeze swinger swinging back and forth. Like, the way the lines are constructed and the rhythm of the poem, it's just, like, it's so visual and just how she chooses the language. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've never quite heard a poem like that, I don't think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's, I mean, it has to have been a little experimental in its time. I don't know. I find it really inspiring to see somebody who is not, I mean, is obviously concerned with transmitting an image and a meaning, but also trying to do this very clever, creative thing of making the language kind of communicate that message as well.
Yeah, I like that. Nice. Hey, my first thing is seeing a deer. Seeing a deer.
Ooh, I like that.
Maybe this is selfish in a way. Maybe this is too sort of like human focused, because I'm not talking about deer themselves. I'm talking about how cool it is when I, Griffin McElroy, a human being, see a deer.
Yeah.
But every time I see a deer, it's like, I'm not a superstitious person or anything like that. But whenever I see a deer, my mind goes to like, what does this mean? This means something.
I took a picture not long ago, put it up on the Instagram. I was going on a walk in our neighborhood and there were just a few deer and you could tell like they had just kind of taken over. Like there has been less traffic in our area and thus more deer appearance.
Yes, I read something about, and this is maybe a dark way to start out this subject, but just that the behaviors of deer and really most sort of like urban wildlife is like they are changing because of the way that we are now living our lives sort of in seclusion, and that, you know, it's kind of a neat transition now because you see deer fucking everywhere. But once things get back to normal for a while, it is not going to be a neat
transition.
Yeah,
that's going to be tricky, huh?
Going to be quite tricky and bad. I would love to not focus on that, though, during this segment. There are estimated to be 30 million deer in the U.S., and that's quite a bit. And under, quote, optimal conditions, that number can double every 2 years.
Ooh, man.
It's not optimal right now, obviously, due to various different like habitat loss factors. But regardless, like we see deer all the time. We moved into this house in 2018? And it's deer city up here, baby. But even though I see them all the time, it's still so special. Outside of my office window, they will like come in our front yard and eat the jasmine. And even though they're eating our plants, it's reframed how I think about plants in our yard, where it's just like, well, that's deer fuel. They need that. It's serving its ultimate purpose, which is filling up these beautiful, beautiful deer. I really like it. I think I like looking out my office window at animals regardless. I have a branch of a tree that extends just out past the it's actually a glass door, so it's quite a large little portal to the outside world. And I'll see squirrels just like chilling out there. And I've taken to just kind of looking out the door at those squirrels and just kind of watching them for a while. Which is, squirrels are cute as hell, man. Like, I don't know why everybody's not talking about these things all the time. They're really cute. Those tails, fucking forget about
it. They are good.
They're really good.
They can be quite destructive, I will say.
Well, not personally, I don't feel the effects of that very much. So for me, they're still good in my book. Deer are way bigger than squirrels.
True.
They command your attention. I think seeing an animal where you didn't expect one kind of catches the eye, especially when they are as big as a deer. Can you think of another animal that you see frequently in the wild that's as big as a deer? No. A deer's just like, hey, what's up? And your eye's like, whoa, wait, what's that doing there?
I mean, man.
Wow, babe, that's I feel like I'm back in the poetry corner. They're just so quiet and majestic. Too, like they hold themselves so regally.
And there's something about those eyes, right?
Those eyes.
The stillness, you know?
What do they know that I don't know? Mm. Some of them also have big antlers, which is just like, that's like some like fairy time magic bullshit. That's like you've wandered in from the fey wilds and you have these antlers and it's like, You're on some Princess Mononoke shit over there.
Uh-huh.
And that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. For a long time, we had what I assume was a mother deer and her two children that just kind of hung out in our area. We'd see them all the time, watch those kids grow up. It was nice.
It was really nice. They ate a whole lot of our plants.
True.
Like a lot of our plants. To this day, our plants are still reeling from the deforestation that these deer visited upon it. But they're so beautiful, and they represent this crossroads between man and nature that just delights me to no end. Although when I do see them when I'm driving on our street, obviously it's a residential street. I'm not driving very, very fast. So I will see them typically on the side of the road thinking like, are we cool, deer? Because you could just jut out right into the middle of the road with no warning right now. Like I always inch past them like, are we good? Are we good? Okay, we're good. deer have had like a sort of special significance or spiritual significance to like all kinds of different civilizations throughout human history, but almost always they represent a sort of quietude and also intuition, which I really like, because I just it's like they're living in another world than I am. I sound like an elementary school art teacher right now, but I just like them. I want to know their secrets. Tell me your secrets, dear.
Yeah, I always kind of interpret that stillness as a like, we cool? We cool right now? We cool?
They're feeling us out. I liked the mom deer and kid deer. I liked eventually it hit the point where like we would like walk down our steps after coming back from doing something. They would be eating shit in our front yard and they would like just watch us as we walked into the house instead of running away because they knew.
Yeah, we cool.
We're not packing. Mm-hmm. We're cool. We like that they're here.
Yeah, no, you feel like a certain amount of pride when a deer is like, oh no, she's okay.
Deer like, if we weren't together and I had to put together a Tinder profile, I would put in, deer like me. Deer trust me. And that would attract, I think, a certain type of person.
Yeah, I mean, that elementary school art teacher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hey, can I steal you away? I don't like thinking about not being with you, even in like a fun like role play experience. Can I steal you away?
Yes.
+1 9 8 7 6 5 4 3 2 1. Blast off into wealth and financial security and responsibility. With rocket money.
Oh, that's the countdown.
The countdown is for the rocket. Uh-huh. They have to do that because if not, people stand under the rocket of rocket money. They get all burnt up dead.
Yeah.
So powerful is the force of this fuel as it's oxidized and ejected. But for you, some people get burnt up by the rocket, but you're going to save a buttload of money on things like subscriptions you don't need anymore that maybe you didn't know you had anymore that rocket money can not only identify for you, but also help you get them canceled.
I also get these little notifications that are like, hey, did you know that you spent this much money on this very particular online store? And I'm like, whoa, I am spending too much money in that online store. I would not have noticed it otherwise.
Rachel's candle habit was putting us out of house and home.
Do you know you're spending $750 a month on candles?
Well, not no more, because Rocket Money showed you the error of your ways. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. That is wild. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful. Hey, can I read a Jumbotron for you?
Please.
This one is for Grammary, and it is from Soren, who says, dear Grammary, thank you for being my best friend, my DM, and my kissing buddy. You've supported me through my transition so far, and I can't wait to grow with you and become your full-fledged boyfriend. I can't wait to travel with you and explore the world and figure out who we are. Love, your small boyfriend, Soren. Small.
I love kissing buddy.
Kissing buddy is a good job that I think you should be able to put on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and then people could endorse you.
And that would be actually extremely weird and a breach of trust and privacy. Do you want to read this next one?
Yes. This is for Jenny. It is from Olin. Jenny, thank you for being such a great partner while I've been in grad school. Coming home to you made the stressful days so much better. I'm grateful for you, and I can't wait to keep building our life together. You're my good, good computer lady, and I'm your librarian ghoul. I love you.
I knew it. I knew every library has a ghost or ghoul or mummy or skeleton or Dracula in it. I've been saying that. How long have I been saying that, babe? How long have I been saying that?
Oh, gosh, what, 6, 7 years?
If not longer.
Uh-huh.
Because I had one experience in a library that I'm like really sure was spooky.
Are you thinking of Ghostbusters?
Yeah. I was in the library and this big nasty monster started to knock books all over the place. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm just trying to find the latest Dan Brown novel. Uh-huh. And now I have to be spooked by a specter?
Slimed and spooked.
Slimed and spooked. Mm-hmm. No thanks. This is why I don't go to libraries anymore.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hi, everybody. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
We're both doctors. And
nope, just me.
Okay, well, Sydney's a doctor, and I'm a medical enthusiast, and we create Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine.
Every week, I dig through the annals of medical history to bring you the wildest, grossest, sometimes dumbest tales of ways we've tried to treat people throughout history.
And lately, we do a lot of modern fake medicine. Because everything's a disaster, but it's slightly less of a disaster every Friday, right here on MaximumFun.org, as we bring you Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. And remember,
don't drill a hole in your head.
Hey, what is your second thing?
My second thing is traffic lights.
Oh!
Just kind of came to me, just like in a burst of clarity.
Can I admit something to you?
Yes.
The other day we were playing with Henry and I had like a red ball, a yellow ball, and a green ball.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to be like, this is a traffic light. But it has been so long since I've driven in a car that I couldn't remember the order. Like, I couldn't remember if red is on top or if red is on the bottom. And this moment, red is on the top.
Top. Yeah. Wow.
Red is on top, obviously.
I'm a little freaked out.
I'm a little freaked out too, man.
I mean, obviously, red light, green light, great, great game. We play it with Henry all the time.
Love that.
But also just kind of the thought, the innovation that went into this, because what happened, I was doing some research, what happened, cars came out.
Yeah.
Cars started going faster and faster. There was nothing in place. I mean, there were policemen who were like, hey, you stop and you go. But there was like nothing. There was nothing ready for it.
Right.
You know, the world's first traffic light was manually operated and gas lit. And it came out in London in 1868. But then less than a month after it was implemented, it exploded.
Oh, that's not good.
So whoops.
Were the first traffic like... Did we crack the red, yellow, green sort of thing? The yellow light seems like such a bold innovation.
At first, it was just red and green.
Okay.
It was just, it was like, oh, whoops, we need something in between there, huh?
Yeah, because people are really stopping extremely quickly.
So the first automated traffic control system was patented in 1910 and just included the words stop and proceed, and neither was illuminated.
What?
So it was just like, I'm guessing like an arm would go down that said stop, but at night,
you're just not
pretty
gonna,
useless.
Yeah. God, what did they do at night? Did they hold a torch out in front of them as they drove? What were they doing?
You know, things took off pretty quickly, if you think. So in 1913, the Model T started to roll off.
Right.
And, you know, they could go about 40 miles an hour. And in that same year, almost 4,000 people, or actually more than 4,000, died in car crashes. And so there just wasn't the, you know, policemen would stand in the center, but it just wasn't safe for them, and it wasn't particularly effective for drivers.
Right.
A Cleveland engineer named James Hodge borrowed the red and green signals being used on railroads already and then tapped into the electricity that ran through the trolley lines.
Oh, interesting.
And created the first municipal traffic control system.
Still didn't have that yellow light in there, though. Dang,
nope.
Dang.
The light made its debut in Cleveland in 1914. And then a police sitting in a booth on the sidewalk controlled the signals with a flip of a switch.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess we didn't have computer.
Still figuring out.
Right.
By 1930, all major American cities and major small towns had at least one traffic light. And the vehicle fatality rates fell more than 50% between 1914 and 1930.
Wow, that's right? Amazing. Did we have seatbelts yet? Probably not.
No,
huh?
No.
Oh, no.
I mean, our parents didn't even really have seatbelts when they were kids.
Jesus.
That's a real new thing.
Jesus.
The yellow light was 1920. A Detroit policeman invented the first four-way, three-colored traffic lights.
Oh, huge.
Mm-hmm.
Massive.
Mm-hmm.
Massive. I always think of the Simpsons episode where I think like Lisa is the mayor. There's something going on where they have control over the city. And I remember this one gag about how She has completely eliminated traffic by getting rid of the green light. So people just see the yellow light and they're like, oh, I gotta get through it. And so everybody like gets to the intersections like very hastily.
Oh, that's good.
That is good.
Yeah. This is like one of those things that you kind of take for granted. But like, if you think about the work that went into addressing kind of innovation that was happening, like, you know, just like hurry up and catch up with this like incredible thing that's happening in the country.
Right.
Being like, oh, let's make everybody safer and let's do it in a way that's like very easy to understand.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I imagine there had to be some level of like PSA going out there like, okay, guys, this is what we're doing now.
Well, that's what I read about was the whole game, Red Light, Green Light, was like part of this whole instructional campaign.
Wow.
The thing I read said that like a Cleveland teacher created the game and gave the name of the teacher. And I was like, wow, this is,
yeah.
How can this be confirmed? But yeah, there was all this just kind of instructional effort starting with kids, like going all the way up of like, this is what a traffic light is.
But then when that yellow light joined the mix, there must have been drivers who saw that yellow light pop up and just like swerved and careen into a building like, what is that one do?
What does that mean?
What is that one? Can I tell you about my second thing?
Yes.
My second thing is what is probably my favorite Broadway musical, Into the Woods.
Oh.
God, I love Into the Woods.
Me too.
It packs probably the most sort of emotional weight for me, especially in that like Mondo heavy second act. But it is also just so good and so well written and so clever.
I find it so, this is like so miraculous for me because Griffin is somebody that grew up with a lot of access to musicals.
Right.
I did not have a lot of familiarity with it, but one particular production that I loved as a kid was Into the Woods. It was the Bernadette Peters, like PBS.
Joanna Gleason, Chip Zine, like, yes, that production we also had on VHS. I think it was two tapes, actually. One was Act One and one was Act Two.
Oh, ours was like literally taped off of PBS.
Oh, okay.
This was a VHS of David Weiner's creation.
Right. It is an amazing, amazing show. And I think the reason for that, the fact that it is also your touchstone for theater is like the first time you see it, like it is so clever that it leaves like an indelible mark. Like,
And also like the fact that it relies on like so many established fairy tales, like makes it very conducive to sharing with your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, the second act gets pretty heavy.
Yeah.
There are actually lots of stories, people like taking their kids to the original Broadway run and like pulling them out in the second act when, you know, like Rapunzel fucking dies.
Yeah, yeah.
The, you know, Cinderella's prince has an extramarital affair. Like there's a lot of stuff in there. That is sort of the magic trick that this show plays of Act One is essentially a like a mashup of all of these. It's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe of fairy tales. That blends Jack and the Beanstalk and Rapunzel and Little Red Riding Hood and Cinderella and a bunch more. They just sort of interweave their stories very, very cleverly. It was written by Sondheim, who obviously is a absolute legend.
Now, who is that? What did he do?
Craig Sondheim. Mm. no, it's Stephen Sondheim. He did, you know.
Everything.
Sweeney Todd, West Side Story. I think he actually just did lyrics for West Side Story, but... And it is such a wildly ambitious show, not just in like its storytelling or its scale. Like Act Two, the magic trick I was alluding to is that like everything goes to shit, and it gets like very, very heavy, much, much heavier. It is like a completely different show, tonally and narratively than the first act was, and. Like there's a literal giant fight scene at the end of the show, which like productions have, I saw a community theater production that like First Stage did back in Huntington. That was the theater troupe that I did shows with, and like seeing how everybody handles the giant fight at the end is always like entertaining to see. But more than that, like what is so ambitious about the show is like all of the themes that it is tackling, most of which are sort of centered around parents and like relationships with parents, the loss of parents, the forgiveness of parents and parental like failings.
Also kind of the private life, the like personal ambition of parents that goes like beyond their children and their family, you know?
Right. As you watch characters in this show go from like wanting to be parents and then becoming parents or losing parents and then reflecting on, you know, the things that their parents taught them. That's like a main theme of the show is careful the things you say, children will listen. Just saying that like made me like, a little bit. It is an amazing, amazing show. The movie adaptation also isn't that bad. It's got Meryl Streep and Anna Kendrick and James Corden and a bunch of like really, really great performers in it. But for me, yes, it all goes back to that original Broadway performance, the cast of which is fantastic.
It blew my mind. Like, I feel like I still remember seeing it for the first time, and the moment where there's like interaction with the narrator, who you think is like for you as an audience member, and then when suddenly
they break
narrator,
the fourth wall,
oh my gosh,
yes, and bring in the narrator. That is just one of the interweavings that happens in the show. The opening number of this song, all the music is incredible. Like, it is syncopated in a way that is like so fascinating, and it is built around like a handful of motifs that they just wring every drop out of throughout the course of the show. And also, like, some of the songs last forever. The opening song in this show is called Prologue, Into the Woods, and it introduces all the characters, all the storylines that you're going to see throughout the course of the show. It is 12 minutes long, start to finish, and that's fucking incredible. And yes, the performances in the original Broadway cast is, like, amazing. Joanna Gleason plays the baker's wife. She was also on West Wing for a long time.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. Chip Zine is the baker, and he has this, like, delicate voice that is like so incredible. But yes, the standout, the like star, is Bernadette Peters as the witch, which is such a fucking cool part of the show, because she's obviously like framed as the antagonist for the first half, which is just sort of leaning on these fairy tales, and then in the second half, where again everything falls apart, she becomes this almost like ambivalent third party who is there to just like render judgment and fucking tear down every other like member of the cast and every other event that they have done.
Such a like incredibly complex character for like somebody that starts as a witch, you know, like the musical really plays with like what is good and bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. She has a line in this song where she like stands in judgment of every other character in the show called Last Midnight, where she says, you're so nice. You're not good. You're not bad. You're just nice.
Yeah.
I'm not good. I'm not nice. I'm just right.
Yeah.
It's so like
such a powerful line for a Midwestern child.
Yes. I want to play some of that song because it is Last Midnight, because it comes close to the end of the show where she is just like just reading these fools. And it is happening at this sort of apocalyptic moment in the show. And it scared the shit out of me as a kid. Like the idea of somebody singing at the edge of the end of the world, like really, really like stuck with me. And of course it's Bernadette Peters just kind of killing it. So here's a little bit of Last Midnight.
I'm the hitch, I'm what no one believes, I'm the witch. You're all liars and thieves, like his father, like his son will be too. Oh, why bother? You'll just do what you do, as the last midnight. So goodbye, all. Coming at you fast, midnight. Soon you'll see the sky fall. Here you want.
I think that represents sort of the emotional ability of this show to like really land these big, heavy emotional swings, like these really, really heavy emotional punches. And so like Last Midnight does this with the regret of everything that has happened in the show and the sort of like turning of the story from like, oh, these guys are just all flawed and doing their best, to like, actually, they've been pretty bad up to this point.
Yeah.
And maybe they deserve what's coming to them. And then the show has this one last number called No One Is Alone, where a lot of the members of the like surviving members of the cast who have all lost something very, very important to them throughout the show, like experience this like powerful found family. That is like so, so incredible. And this song just breaks my heart every time I hear it. So of course I'm going to do that to our listeners now by playing a little bit of No One Is Alone.
Someone is on your side. while we're seeing our stars, our side, maybe we forgot they are not alone. No one is alone.
That's I love this show so much, and I get it stuck in my head. Like, I get weird parts of it stuck in my head, just like lines
No, you were whistling it yesterday. I heard you.
I decided I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
And since prepping for this, like, all I've wanted to do is watch it again. Can we watch it again tonight?
Yeah, of course.
I would watch either one. I really do think, nailing a Broadway musical movie adaptation is real tough. And I think that they did diligent work with that in I think 2014 adaptation. I don't remember exactly when the movie came out, but if it's all you have access to, it ain't bad. It's pretty good, but the Broadway performance just still
had you seen Bernadette Peters in anything before that?
The Jerk, and
you saw The Jerk before you saw Into the Woods.
I'm pretty sure.
Really?
I mean, our parents didn't really restrict like different comedy movies to us at a very young. I saw The Jerk very, very young
because I that was my first exposure to Bernadette Peters, and I was like, oh, she's a really talented, you know, singer and theater performer. And then I was like, oh, she's in movies too.
Yeah,
it like blew my mind.
God, she's so good. Okay, hey, do you want to know what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
We got a cool email from Shreya, who together with her sister has put together a project called Letters Against Isolation, where they are organizing people to write letters to self-isolating elderly folks who are, you know, super, super lonely right now. Shreya says, Letters Against Isolation has grown really fast. Right now, we have over 300 volunteers writing to almost 1,000 seniors across the country. In the last week alone, we sent 500 letters. We need more volunteers to keep up. And you can learn more about this project at lettersagainstisolation.com. I was looking at it today. It's really, really cool. And
such an incredible idea.
Yeah. So I would encourage everybody to, if you got some time and you want to brighten somebody's day, lettersagainstisolation.com. It sounds really, really cool. Elise, and also somebody else wrote in about Pomplamoose this week, the YouTube music. Do you know about Pomplamoose?
I mean, I just know that it's a French word.
Oh, yes. They are they started out a very long time ago as a two-person musical outfit that would do covers of songs on YouTube videos, where you would like sort of watch, sort of Wolfpecky in a way. But they have gone on to like release a bunch of albums and do a whole bunch of stuff. Anyway, Elise said, what instantly puts me in a good mood is watching a Pomplamoose video. The duo works with super talented artists to pull off an incredible mix of mashups, originals, and collaborations that all slap. The musicians all smile at each other, and you can just tell that they love what's happening in that room. Man, that's a good, if you don't know about Pomplamoose, that's a good like drip feed of positivity.
Yeah.
I adore those two. They are fantastic. That's enough good stuff, I think, for 1 week.
Okay.
Right?
I think so.
Let's save some for next week.
Okay.
I want to thank Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And I take it back. Here's more good stuff. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the shows on there.
Yes. There is so much content. There is just so much content. And it is nice to have my little feed update with my Max Fun shows, because they're all just like, they're so charming.
Mm.
Max Fun is just a network full of charming people.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. And that's going to wrap it up. Positive like send off for this week. Any advice? Anything? Watcha. Hey.
Hey.
Why don't you cook something new this week? Experiment. There's that thing that you've wanted. Maybe not cook, make something. Well, you've wanted to make that thing for a bit.
Yeah. A lot of people are using this time, because the idea of writing can be kind of daunting for a lot of folks, but you get into that visual art, let's say.
Visual art. Yeah. It doesn't have to be words.
Do a little sketching.
Do a sketch.
Mm-hmm.
Twist some coat hangers together and make a mobile.
Yeah.
I love that.
I do too.
I'm going to go make a mobile right now.
You're not.
I am. It's going to have rocket ships on it.
Money won't pay. Work can all pay. 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 Money won't pay. Thank you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.